Don't wrap me up in blankets. I'll grab my suit and tie. Given the choice, I'd leave this life in style.
And welcome back to Backbone Radio. It's a new band that I kind of stumbled upon, thanks to a friend who has played with them. This is Glowing House, and kind of a edgy bluegrass sound. I just think they're pretty terrific, so I thought I'd play a little bit for you. Anyway, we are talking with Paul, a caller, about energy. Welcome back, Paul.
Hey, how you doing?
Great. So, yeah. Did that answer your question about energy?
Well, yes and no. You know, my biggest, my biggest soapbox is that we don't have anybody capable in this country to put together a sustainable energy plan that can show us where to go and what we should do instead of fumbling around in the dark like we've been doing for the last 100 years.
Well, the strategy certainly has been incoherent of late. And I think what I don't like, you know, with the government, instead of enabling the market to work and for, you know, promising technologies to receive private investment, instead they're taking taxpayer monies and investing in projects that may or may not be profitable. And the taxpayer deserves to, if I'm going to invest, I would rather invest voluntarily than involuntarily. And I think what I don't like about the government being involved in energy production is that the rhetoric, the information, tends to get very, very hyperinflated. And you know, I've yet to hear a politician give an explanation of energy that isn't both sort of self-aggrandizing and inflated. I mean, they make it sound like this particular kind of energy is the savior of all. This kind of energy is evil, when in fact energy is just energy, and it deserves to have a discussion that is not inflated by rhetoric or self-promotion. It bothers me that this particular government is stopping energy exploration in some sectors and then taking my hard-earned money and putting it into sectors that are less profitable or less useful. I don't have a problem. I mean, I occasionally consider having solar panels put on my house, but that would be a voluntary direct contribution to that kind of energy, as opposed to an involuntary contribution through my tax dollars for things that may or may not work. Do you have any hope that any particular candidate is putting out a plan that you find?
No, I've seen no one really speak to a plan or do anything about it. I agree with you that having our government involved in it, and especially the DOE and all these leeches that we have as far as national labs that take, you know, billions of dollars a year to just run, I mean, from a personnel standpoint, yet there is no requirement to produce anything. You know, there's not a megawatt requirement. There's nobody that has to be responsible for what comes out of them. And you know, I've been a lobbyist in Washington, and I've been in academia, and so I've been part of the problem, and so I've seen it from the inside out, and I can tell you the system isn't working, and it won't work the way it is.
Well, I definitely think we would be better served by having really any one of the Republicans that are running, because they at least would remove inappropriate government obstacles to energy exploration. And, you know, I'm not saying there's no government role. I certainly think there are standards, environmental standards, and so forth, that are important. But when some of these regulations, though, are I would say more punitive than appropriate, and are not put into place for scientific purpose, or because the science says it's smart, they're put into place as sort of bones thrown at the feet of environmental lobbyists. And I would like to see an honest reckoning of these different laws and regulations to say, you know, here's areas where we need them, here's areas where it's just not, you know, it's not feasible, it's not right that we stop exploration when, in fact, a number of these companies do have a good track record, are putting in place. You know, I remember reading about oil exploration in Anwar. There are a number of companies that know how to extract that, extract fuel from this area without doing any harm to the environment. And yet, for, I would say, ostensibly political purposes, they are denied that ability. And, you know, the very people who cry foul and don't want exploration, they drive to work like the rest of us in cars. They use natural gas at their house. They use different kinds of fuel. And in fact, people like Al Gore, who have 10,000 square feet of house, use a ton more energy than me in my 1,000 square foot house. So the hypocrisy is pretty obvious.
Oh yeah, it's all over, and we're all part of that same scheme. It's just that I see no one sticking up for energy as far as a plank in there in the political process. And we saw what happened to all the rhetoric that happened when Obama was talking about it. That has pretty much gone to the wayside.
Well, I imagine that the topic will resurface. I think that the global warming folks are having a little harder of a time making their case, given some of the the fact that Alaska is completely frozen over right now, and we have to have icebreakers go in and give fuel to the folks in Nome, I think makes it a bit more difficult for the global warming folks to make their case that this is in fact some kind of hideous prospect on the horizon, so we all must stop using energy now. I do think that we are going to see more talk about energy as we go farther into the election. I'd like to see somebody stand up for the taxpayer as far as ethanol goes. Everybody knows that ethanol is an absolute waste of taxpayer subsidies, and that it has distorted the food market, made it more difficult for people to get food, while also producing really nothing beneficial as far as energy goes. And then just like 2 days ago in the Wall Street Journal, there's an article about this agency, I mentioned it earlier, Range Fuels, that promised to make cellulosic ethanol, which looks promising on paper, but yet have not produced 1 ounce of it, and has used several million dollars of taxpayer funds to produce absolutely nothing. So I'd like to see a politician or a candidate get up and talk about eliminating these subsidies for all of these things. I don't want to see subsidies going to natural gas or oil or wind or geothermal or ethanol. I figure the market can, the market is much, much better, much more productive and proficient in being able to reward those things that are promising and deny those things that are a boondoggle.
Yeah, I agree with you. We have been subsidizing energy from day one when Rockefeller and all those guys were involved in it, and we continue to go down that same path, and we're just kind of poking sticks in the dark here trying to find one that will work, whether it's ethanol or cellulosic ethanol or geothermal or whatever it might be. But without a plan, what there's an old saying, those who fail to plan, those who fail to plan to fail.
That's well put. Well, I would like to see a candidate get up there and say, no more subsidies, let's let the market work. Let's get government out of the way in the areas where government is arbitrarily drawing a line, making sure that government is only involved where it absolutely needs to be, and let's let the private sector and these scientists and energy exploration get out there and do their work. And I think that all the different kinds of energy need to be on the table, not as potential targets for subsidies, but as potential targets for the private market and private market investment, private market use.
That'd be great.
That would be I sure appreciate that you've called. Thanks for calling
into
the show. I think this is a very important topic, and I would I would bet that it's going to heat up after the primaries. I think once we've picked a candidate, we're going to see whoever that candidate is going, you know, nose to nose with the president in a number of areas, including energy and energy exploration. So yeah. I appreciate that you've raised the topic.
All right. Thank you much.
Have a great night.
You too. Bye-bye.
Well, we're coming up on a commercial break in about a minute, and really do appreciate the call and hope that in the future more folks call in, because it gets my mind thinking. I prepare for the show by going through a lot of different things, and I think energy is one issue that I've actually never visited on the show, and it's an important issue as somebody who, see, I use natural gas and also gasoline. I know some of the utilities organizations also supplement with wind or supplement with solar, which I think is important. But as I mentioned earlier, all forms of energy extraction have pluses and minuses. Unless you want to see an entire field of solar panels, which definitely has an impact on the vegetation and the animals that live there, you know, I'm not saying that we couldn't have that or shouldn't have that in certain areas, but it's not something we could have everywhere. And that's true for wind, it's true for geothermal, it's true for hydropower. All of these things have drawbacks. All of them have benefits. And so having a reasoned discussion that does not involve politics or hyperinflated rhetoric would behoove us all. We're coming up on a break. We'll be back soon. You're listening to Backbone America. Welcome back to the final segment of Backbone Radio. Over here, dancing a little bit to this music. It's a good pick. Don, you've done a great job tonight. It's some good music. Had a good caller. We had some great guests. And I still have a little bit of information to go through before the end of our show. But I've had a great time. I hope y'all have as well. It was interesting. I did a fair amount of climbing through my pile of magazines to kind of get a sense of, you know, what do we have ahead of us this year? It's 2012, which just blows my mind. I think my mind is still surprised that we're in the 2000s. But 2012, and like I said earlier, I think it's going to be a great year. But it's interesting. One of the things that I read in preparation for the show is that Indiana, a judge upheld a voucher program there, and it's one of the larger voucher programs in the country, and I think that's exciting. Even more important, a Texas appeals court cleared the way Friday for the enforcement of a pro-life law in Texas that requires doctors to conduct a sonogram before conducting an abortion. And why this is so important is that when people see that little heartbeat, when people see those little hands and feet, something in the mind connects with that tiny person, that little baby. And, you know, you can go in with a lot of pressures from boyfriends or parents or friends who say, oh, it's nothing, it's no big deal. Go in and just, you know, make it go away. But when you see that little heartbeat, when you see those little, you know, depending on, you know, heartbeats, I think is at like 19 days, little hands and feet within the first 2 months, little eye and nose. It's amazing what you could see even with an early sonogram. And when you see those little hands and feet, when you see that little heartbeat, something can change in the heart. And I think of all the women that regret the death of their child. Had they only seen that heartbeat, they wouldn't have gone through with it. And so my hat is off to the court and also to the state house that enacted that law, because it's a very empowering law for women and children. And I think it's a good omen for the year. A couple other things that I noticed as I was reading through that I think are leaving me to feel a bit optimistic. India, in India, as in China and a number of other countries in the Far East, sex elective abortions, that is the killing of unborn children because the parent wanted a boy or they wanted a girl, usually it's because they wanted a boy and they got a girl, that those abortions are decreasing in India. And that, because, you know, right now, in India, so it would say in 2001, India had 6 million fewer girls than boys. And in 2011, it looked like that had risen to 7 million. But they're also looking at some other calculations that are showing that that trend is starting to change. The government and NGOs have done a number of things to educate folks. I don't know how do you educate folks that women are equal to men and that little girls are worth saving, but they've done that, and they actually have a thing called the Save the Daughter campaign, and people are gradually changing their hearts and changing their minds about the value of girls and women, and that is showing in a lower rate of sex selection abortion. So that's a good thing. One of the things that I'm not particularly optimistic about is the Arab Spring. I'm afraid it's going to end up being an Arab winter. One of my favorite magazines, which is The Economist, did a spread on the Middle East, and just looking around at the different countries, and I've been to a couple of these countries, and I actually rather actually I love Egyptians and Jordanians. They're some of the most hospitable, wonderful people I've ever encountered while traveling. But if you look at these countries, the countries where there has been a shakeup, where the despot has been removed and Islamist power is beginning to take form, seeing some very serious persecution of Christians, and in other cases, sectarian violence, Shia versus Sunni, just as we're sort of shutting the door on our experience and involvement in Iraq, the amount of suicide bombings appears to be increasing almost sort of weekly. And I fear for those people. There's a lot of people, a lot of Christians have left Iraq. They've gone to other countries, including Syria, and are now, you know, not to say that Assad is a good guy. He's a terrible person, terrible ruler. But they fear, probably rightly so, that should he resign and an Islamist power take its place, that it could, the Christians will be persecuted. They certainly are being persecuted in Egypt and Iraq. They are definitely treated pretty poorly throughout the Middle East, but in some of these places it is incredibly dangerous to be a Christian. That is one area that I'm not feeling particularly optimistic about. And am not particularly optimistic about North Korea either. It's disturbing to see the faces of those wailing in grief over the loss of Kim Jong-il, as Rush likes to say, Kim Jong now dead. But he may have been replaced by, who knows, an even darker character. You never know. But I saw a documentary on North Korea and the deprivation that these folks live with is something that is unimaginable to the average American. If all you have to do is look at a nighttime map of the world in which every spot, even, you know, areas of, you know, sub-Saharan Africa, there are lights on, cities. But if you look at North Korea, it's dark. It's like a dark spot on the map, a lightless spot. It's one of those places where it is totalitarian at its most complete level. And I just feel so sad for these people and what they must go through. And the fact that they either feel this way towards their despot, or they must publicly appear to feel this way in order to keep their lives. Well, that, friends, is the music, meaning that our show is coming to an end. I hate to leave on a dark note because, like I said, I am feeling optimistic about the future and certainly feeling optimistic about my home state of Colorado and KNUS and all of the many blessings I have in my life, from my pets to my family to wonderful opportunities like this. Thank you, Ross Kaminsky. Thank you, KNUS. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in tonight. Certainly appreciate it. You have been listening to Backbone America, Backbone Radio.